With the Iowa legislature scheduled to adjourn in less than a month, will lawmakers have time to reform the state's education system, expand health care services for the poor, and work out a deal on property taxes? River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Many don't expect the legislature to adjourn as scheduled on May 3rd, largely because a few key issues look to take much longer to play out. In the first part of the show, we'll talk with Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall, a Council Bluffs Democrat, and Republican Speaker of the House Craig Paulson from Hiawatha about how the two chambers will resolve their differences. Then, in the second half, the future of a bill requiring new radon controls seems uncertain. Join our conversation after this news. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Clay Masters. The legislative session here in Iowa is scheduled to end early next month, but the future of the biggest issues this year at the State House don't show signs of wrapping up anytime in the next couple weeks. Here to tell me if that assumption is wrong or give us some insight as to how these issues are playing out is Speaker of the House Craig Paulson. He's a Republican from Hiawatha. Mr. Speaker, thanks for being here today.
Well, thanks for having me.
And Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall, a Democrat from Council Bluffs. Senator, thanks for coming on the show today.
Happy to be here.
Now, we want you to get involved in the conversation as well. What proposals are you watching and hoping will make it through this legislative session? Give us a call, 866-780-9100. We're on Facebook at Iowa Public Radio, or tweet us at IPR Talk. So, gentlemen, last week we passed the second funnel deadline. That's a term used to mark milestones bills have to achieve to continue in the legislative process. Speaker Paulson, how do you feel about where this session is at this point?
Well, we still got the May 3rd, as you said, is the 110th day. We're starting to get backed up, but we could still make that if we can get some things done here and disposed of in some semblance of expediency and make the decisions we need to make.
Senator Gronsall?
Well, I'd say that this legislative session's somewhat unique, and every legislative session is. But I share the speaker's hope and maybe a little bit of optimism that we can get things done pretty quickly. The tough issues are always the ones that you don't see much signs of success until very late in the session. We're not quite to very late yet. We might be on the edge of late, but not very late. And so people will come together. We have moved. One of the governor's big priorities is education reform. That is now in conference committee. And we hope that they can work through their differences between the House and the Senate version on ed reform and get something that the governor will be comfortable signing.
We'll get to education in just a moment. One of the three big issues, of course, is health care. Late last week, the governor's Healthy Iowa plan was introduced in the House. It would cover nearly 90,000 low-income Iowans who have a job but still live below the poverty line. Senate Democrats sent a bill that would expand Medicaid to low-income Iowans and add around 150,000 low-income Iowans to those roles. This morning, during the governor's weekly press conference with reporters, he repeated his administration's goal to become the healthiest state in the nation and then defended the Healthy Iowa plan. And here's what he had to say this morning.
And we put a plan together that's designed to work with that fundamental goal. We want to make sure it's sustainable. We know that what the federal government is doing is not affordable and sustainable. Is all you have to do is look at what's going on there every day in their budget and the mess that they have, and that they have these entitlement programs that are out of control, and they're spending $1 trillion more and more taken in. We, on the other hand, have the goal of being the healthiest state, and we're working to try to provide health insurance or financial assistance to everybody so that they can take ownership of their own health and we can help them. I believe this is a very good plan. It does cover everybody. Those people above the poverty level have the opportunity through the partnership exchange to be able to get subsidized insurance coverage. Those below will be able to, through the Healthy Iowa plan, get access to assistance through accountable care organizations throughout the state of Iowa. And I know there are some people who have their minds made up and aren't even willing to look at the details of this plan.
So, Senator Gronstall, you've been critical of the governor's plan, saying for months that the governor had given very few details. Now it's here. Do you see any areas of compromise, or is it Medicaid expansion or the highway?
Well, we certainly see some opportunity to work together on this, and we're going to, you know, we're going to work through that. We agree with the governor on accountable care organizations, but the governor's plan actually adds to the federal deficit because it takes more federal dollars to operate his plan than the plan that the Senate passed. So the governor's plan leaves 60 or 65,000 Iowans out, and those folks will continue to get their health care through emergency rooms in the state of Iowa. That's not a very good plan. The governor's plan costs the state $162 million a year. The plan the Senate passed costs very, very little in the overall scheme of things because the federal government pays for most of it. And I'd also say it's highly unlikely the governor's plan will be approved by Health and Human Services. So he's going down a road that's kind of an ideological road about squeezing the costs of health care, and I just don't think the governor's plan works. The concept that low-income Iowans are going to be able to save some money and put it in a fund, and the state will match that fund, is really pretty crazy on its surface. These are people that can't keep the washing machine running or don't even have a washing machine and do their laundry at a laundromat. These are people, I don't think the governor has any concept of what's going on with poor Iowans.
Speaker Paulson, do you assess this situation similarly? Or?
Well, I mean, you got a couple of questions in there. I mean, first of all, Iowans chose a Republican-controlled House, a Democrat-controlled Senate, and while he wasn't up in the last election, obviously Governor Branstad's a Republican as well. Anyway, the bill has to move through all those. We've all got to find the common ground and try to get something done here. I think that will happen. We haven't had, we've got the bill on Thursday afternoon. We're working through his proposal. The Senate sent over their proposal, and so those have now been married up and are at the same people having the conversations on those. And so we'll just have to work through that and figure that out. This is one quick thing I want to say is it. And I know there's a lot of details here, and we consume hours on this whole thing. But effectively, the same number of people are covered under both plans. The question is, how are they covered? The Senate plan, as I understand it, covers everyone under Medicaid up to 138% of poverty, whereas the governor's plan, it's 100% of poverty or below. You're on Medicaid, and above that, then you would go on to the American Affordable Health Care Act and get your health care through the exchange, which is my understanding is the law requires everybody to get it. So I don't see how either plan over the other encourages more visits to emergency rooms. I mean, what we're trying to do is work rather than medical care just being dealing with a particular sickness, but actually looking at it more from a wellness perspective and make sure people don't have to make as many visits to the doctor.
So where is the common ground?
Well, I think both the House and Senate will work through the things that they can find agreement on. But clearly, the governor's plan basically requires people to pay premiums. Those folks above 100% of poverty will have to pay some premiums. The HHS has already rejected Virginia's plan, which required premiums for people between 100 and 138% of poverty. So the governor's plan is a non-starter to start with, and that's what doesn't really make a lot of sense. So people of good faith can sit down and work together and come through some of the challenges of this. And let me repeat, I think everybody agrees if we can deal with the things that are driving healthcare costs, you know, if we can help people manage diabetes, manage hypertension, high blood pressure, if we could just get back to 1980 obesity levels, we could save the system $1 trillion a year. So we're very open to those kinds of things. But the governor's plan, presuming that those folks between 100% of poverty and 138% of poverty are going to be able to buy, even if there is some subsidy, going to be able to buy health insurance, really, I don't think the governor has any concept of what poverty is in the state of Iowa.
We're going to go to Ryan in Iowa City. He called 866-780-9100. We encourage you to call in as well. We're on Facebook at Iowa Public Radio or tweet us at IPR Talk. Ryan, what are your thoughts here?
Well, happy Monday, gentlemen. I'm very glad that to see both parties taking up the issue of commercial property taxes, and great to see we'll get some relief for the poorest residential tenants and for a lot of our small businesses that are paying these taxes. But the issue that really interests me the most, I'm glad you let the expansion of the bottle bill get through the funnel. I felt very adamantly for years that we watch people walk around here in Iowa City picking up other people's cans, and it's just long overdue that we have water bottles and Gatorade bottles having an incentive to be recycled. So I'm glad that you're taking that on, and hopefully by creating a little bit more redemption value back to the centers and the grocers that are part of this process, hopefully we can get what's right done.
Okay, thanks, Ryan. Any reply to Ryan?
Well, I think the bill that came out in the Senate is now in the Senate Appropriations Committee, and they're working on it. I think they've had a subcommittee, and it's recommended. We'll see where it goes.
We'll jump back to healthcare for a moment, though. But Speaker Paulson, do you see any clear sailing for the governor's Healthy Iowa plan there, or do you see a variation of it? How do you think that's going to go?
Clear sailing? Define clear sailing. I mean, we're working towards the end here. Everything's sailing. I don't know whether it's clear or not, whether you're talking about the ed reform, the budget, property taxes, or the health care. I mean, we're working on it. We got to figure it out. Why can't I think of the name? The current program that expires on December 31st.
Iowa Cares.
Thank you. I even know that. Iowa Cares expires on December 31st. And so, you know, this is something we need to address. I fully expect us to do that.
Another big issue, and we brought it up early on in the conversation, today the governor was asked what his message was to school administrators who have to have their budgets set by next Monday, what his message would be. He said, contact the bills, contact your legislators, the bills and conference committee. The governor said he'd sign legislation before he heads off on a trade mission to China, and he goes on.
Well, if they pass it and get it to me before I leave, but I, you know, here's the thing. We've been working on this from the very beginning, and the House passed it on February 20th. They finally got it to conference. But I believe it can be worked out. We need the major education reform that we've been working on for 3 years. We had the Education Summit. We had the Principal and Teacher Leadership Symposium. We had this task force that helped put this report and recommendations together. We've worked through this process. This is the year we need to pass major education reform. It can be resolved when it's in conference committee. We just need to get the conference committee of people to agree upon it. It then cannot be amendment and can be voted up and down. It can all happen quickly.
So first of all, this committee meeting that he's talking about, when does that take place? Is that later today? Is it happening early this week?
They've already had their first meeting. They had their organizational meeting on Thursday. My understanding is that at that meeting they didn't set the next one, but it is now, I think it's going to be tomorrow is my understanding. The conferees will sit down and start walking through the bill. It'd be my hope we can finish this week. We need to deal with this very quickly.
Well, let's just say the governor created this problem when he said, I won't sign any allowable growth before I get my ed reform bill. He's the guy that decided to hold education funding hostage. He shouldn't have held next fall's funding hostage. We should have worked that out first. The law requires us actually to set it a year and a half in advance. But just setting it for next fall, we could have done that, and he could have taken fiscal 15 the following year. He could have taken that one hostage and said, I'm not going to do anything on that subject until I get this. But he created this problem by saying, I will not sign allowable growth. I will not sign the legislation that establishes the budget for schools until I get something else first. That's a mistake. It's something that doesn't work very well in the legislature when I say, well, your priority's dead unless I get my priority. That's not the way people of good faith work together. So I think it was a mistake for the governor to do that.
And what school year is this setting? This is for fiscal year 15?
It's the money for this fall is fiscal 14. So it's the 13-14 school year, and that is fiscal 14. We are also, the law says we're supposed to be setting it for 14-15, the 15 fiscal year. I'm not sure they can gather all of that on the radio, but
they're taking notes right now,
yeah,
as they're listening.
Yeah, but that's the point. I certainly understand the governor wanting to hold something back, in essence, hold school funding hostage until he gets his way on education reform. But we're working through that in good faith. We've done it. It's the first bill in conference committee. We're doing our level best to get that done, but we still have significant differences. The governor should not have connected these two issues. He should have let schools know what their budget was going to be for this fall, and then if he really needed a hostage, he could take fiscal 15 hostage.
Speaker Paulson, do you see it the same way, that it's taking allowable growth hostage?
Well, I wouldn't actually lay all that at the governor's feet. I mean, I suppose we all have some at our feet, or we can all blame somebody else. The reality of it is, what the governor did is he asked us to deal with education reform before we dealt with the funding. At one level, that just seems to make sense. If you're going to go in and make reforms, it would make sense to me that you deal with the money at the same time. Regardless, we're in the position we're in. I mean, I can be critical of the Senate Democrats. We sent the bill to them on February 20th. It took them 43 days, I think it was, to get it back to us. But I don't think that's helpful to resolving the conference committee this week. I think we need to sit down, go through the bill, and we need to figure it out. And I think we need to try to do it as quick as we can.
So what do we need to figure out? I mean, we're talking about mentor programs with new teachers and veteran teachers. We're talking about base salaries. I mean, what is the common ground that we reach here to get education reform passed?
Well, I'd tell you, from the start of this whole discussion about education reform, way back to the governor's Ed Summit, I think for Senate Democrats, we have looked at the issue of early literacy, and we think it's incredibly important to make sure kids by the end of third grade are able to read at grade level. We think there's common ground there between us, between the House, and between the and with the governor. So everybody can agree on that. I think that's one of the more important elements, is to make sure we have programs that help kids that are lagging in those early elementary grades in terms of reading achievement and get them back on track. And so I think that's probably the place where there's the strongest consensus. There's certainly probably room on the career ladder kind of stuff, room for attracting more and better people to the teaching profession, better preparing teachers. I think there's a lot of common ground to be had there.
Some have analyzed the governor's education reform proposal, the Senate Democrats proposal, and the House Republican proposal. They say that the Republican proposal scales the governor's proposal back, and the Senate proposal almost beefs up the governor's plan. So will we just see what the governor proposed on the first day of the legislative session?
Well, actually, if you look at the governor's plan, one of the things that happened with it was about two-thirds of the school districts in the state of Iowa in the second year were upside down. In other words, the mandates cost more than they were going to get in terms of new resources. The House correctly identified that problem, and that's why they moved towards something that was voluntary for local school districts. The Senate went back to making it mandatory, but providing additional resources so the vast majority of school districts are not upside down in the second year. So those were, both of those were reasonable approaches to the challenge that was in the governor's bill.
Speaker Paulson?
I think that Senator Gronstall identified a lot of the issues there, a lot of places where we can work to figure it out. I will tell you that I am, I know that my caucus is feels very strongly about making sure we maintain some level of accountability. We'll have to figure that out. But anyway, they're, like I say, they're meeting, and hopefully we'll get that done, taken care of in short order.
Also, property tax relief. That's another big one. The Democratic plan offers tax credits to small businesses. Republicans are saying roll back property tax values on all classes of property and pick up a larger share of K-12 school expenses. Any willingness for a compromise here? How do you hash property tax out, and will it get done this session? I think that's a big question on everybody's mind that I'm hearing from.
I think it's a big question on our mind as well. I mean, it's the enemy of getting something done for the last 35 years in terms of commercial property taxes in the state of Iowa. The enemy of that has been, people say, oh, that's not good enough. Whatever the proposal is, people say, we need to go further than that. So the enemy of the good has been the perfect. People look for a perfect solution. I'd really like to find a way to take a step. We've offered repeated compromises with the governor. But I'm kind of in a position where, well, do I cut the deal with the governor or do I cut the deal with the House? And if I have to cut it with both of them, it seems to me like they're going to end up doing it more their way than our way. So Democrats are in control of the Iowa Senate. We think a plan that focuses on small businesses and helps 9 out of 10 businesses do better under our plan than under the governor's plan. So that's been our focus, to take care of small businesses, small and medium-sized businesses in Main Street, Iowa. We think our plan does that. We're certainly open to other alternatives out there, and we'll continue working with the House. We're going to move a bill forward, I think probably this week in the Senate, and get that over to the House. We actually had a compromise last year, early on when we first unveiled this plan. It got 46 votes. 46-4 in the Iowa Senate, pardon me, the year before last. And then when we took up a similar plan last year, we didn't have a single Republican vote for it. So, you know, there's a lot, that's in the Senate. So there's a little bit of politics being played on both sides. But the job is to get something done, take a step. Usually one step kind of demands a second step. And so my advice to people is to compromise. Do half of it our way. I think the House and the governor, the Republicans need to have a consensus on what they want to do, and because it's kind of hard for me to bargain with one and then turn around and the other side says, well, our approach is completely different, and so we look forward to working with him.
Speaker Paulson.
Well, as much as Senator Gronstall wants two bites at the apples, I think he should only get one. That having been said, I'm optimistic we'll be able to figure this out. I mean, we look forward to seeing the Senate proposal. House Republicans have tried very hard to make sure we keep an open mind on this, and so that we can reach some sort of consensus and get a bill on the governor's desk that he can sign. I mean, we have the third highest commercial property taxes in the nation, 16th highest residential property taxes in the nation. We think that's unacceptable. And we need to make some movement on behalf of the hardworking taxpayers of Iowa.
We'll go now to Cheryl in Burlington. She's on the line. Cheryl, what are your thoughts?
I'd like to get back to the health care issue. I have a very simple solution, and I think both these gentlemen agree with three of the principles I want to state here. The first is that we definitely need to do something about the health of the Iowans, and we want to do something to lower insurance premiums, whether it's private insurance premiums or it's insurance premiums paid basically by the state because of income requirements. And we all want to create jobs. So I have a novel idea of giving 100% tax credit on our state income taxes for joining a gym.
Okay, Cheryl, that's where we're going to have to end it there. I'm sorry. Thanks. So what do you guys have to say really quickly about just join a gym?
Actually, exercise is very good for your health. I encourage people to run for office. You go out door knocking every night. That's good exercise.
Speaker Paulson.
Appreciate the opportunity to be here, and we'll get back to work.
All right, Senator Gronstall, Speaker Paulson, thanks for being here. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. This is River to River on Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. A bill that passed the Senate by a vote of 37-13 would require schools to test for radon and remove it from the school's buildings. It also mandates requirements for home builders to make radon mitigation easier. But last week, it didn't make it through a Republican-dominated House committee. Joining me here in the State House Law Library is Senator Matt McCoy, a Democrat from Des Moines. He was the floor manager of this bill in the Senate. Thanks for being here, Senator.
Thank you, Clay, and glad to be with you today.
And Gail Orcutt, a radon-induced lung cancer survivor from Pleasant Hill. Thanks for being here, Gail.
Thank you.
And Galen Hauser, the Deputy Executive Director of the Iowa Association of School Boards. Thanks for joining us on River to River today.
All right. Thank you.
So we reached out, I should also add, we reached out to House Republicans to be on today's show, but they couldn't make it because of a scheduling conflict. Do you know whether your child's school tests for radon? Would you like to see the school your child attends or where you or your loved ones work do radon testing? Call us, join the conversation, 866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook at Iowa Public Radio, or tweet us at IPR Talk. And I should say, too, we're talking about radon this half of the show. It's a chemical, radioactive, colorless, odorless, tasteless gas occurring naturally. And we'll start, Gail, tell us your story about your cancer and how you knew that it was because of radon.
It was just 3 years ago this spring. I had a cough and a wheeze, and I just thought allergies were going to be really bad. And it got worse to where I was wheezing with every breath. So I went to my physician, and he ordered an x-ray right away, which led to the CT, which found the cancer. I've never smoked a day in my life, so it was pretty surprising to hear that I had lung cancer. My entire left lung was removed, and before I started chemo, I happened on an article titled Lung Cancer in Non-Smokers, and it was all about radon. Up to that point, I'd never heard the word radon, even though my husband and I have lived in, well, I've lived in Iowa all my life, and my physicians hadn't mentioned it at the time. So my husband went to the hardware store and got a test kit, and our house tested well above the action level that the EPA suggests. So we got a mitigator, and I finally felt like my one lung that was left was going to be safe.
So you just started having breathing problems and went and saw a doctor, and,
yes.
And they came to that conclusion that it was radon.
And I was very fortunate that it was caught so early. Most people are diagnosed with lung cancer in the later stages, and then surgery isn't an option, and surgery is definitely your best option.
And what was your occupation, or what is your occupation?
I am a retired teacher. I taught for 33 years, all in Iowa, and that was another question I've always had. Did I live with radon at home and then also go to work and have it there too? I don't know.
Senator McCoy, can you tell us a little bit about the bill and why there was so much support in the Senate?
Well, I think Gail's one of the reasons why there was a great deal of support. She has been an outspoken advocate and I think spent a lot of time educating legislators. Gail educated me on the problem, and I was able to introduce a bill which would have required all schools in the state of Iowa, both public and non-public, to test for radon levels to determine, first of all, what the levels are, and then secondly, to come forward with a plan to mitigate those schools. In addition, because of the work of the American Cancer Society, we were also able to add a new piece of legislation that would require all new residential homes built in the state to have what's considered a passive mitigation system. So that would allow each home owner to determine what their levels of radon are in the home, and if they do test high, they would simply be adding a fan, which would help exhaust the radon gas from the home. The Home Builders Association came to us as part of a compromise and agreed to that legislation. So that's what was included in this package that passed with bipartisan support. I was pleased to see so many of my fellow colleague Republicans join us on this very important issue.
And were you surprised that it didn't translate into the House?
You know, I was surprised, but I'm also very hopeful that in light of the 37 votes that this passed out of the Senate with, that we will be able to find some bipartisan cooperation for the upcoming session next year. As you know, once a piece of legislation clears one house or the other, then it is available for debate the following year. So I suspect Gail will be a busy advocate this summer. I suspect she'll be getting around the state, spending time with legislators.
I will.
Now it sounded like it was a funding or cost issue in the House committee as to what made it stall. Galen Hauser with the Iowa Association of School Boards, do you have concerns with the bill because of the cost issue?
Well, we have concerns as an association. Our members are concerned anytime the state mandates a requirement of any kind and doesn't provide adequate funding or provide funding for the mandate. And that was our members were concerned about requirement of the radon testing from that standpoint. Not that we're against radon testing. As a matter of fact, we're, as an association, we're currently working with our insurance carrier, Employers Mutual Company, that insures the buildings on 90% plus of the schools in Iowa to work with them on how the insurance company might be able to help districts with the radon. It's my understanding they're not able to provide testers, but we are this spring. We have a number of seminars throughout the state for our member districts that participate in the program. So we will be including the radon testing, what to look for in an inspector, because I would imagine as we're going to increase the attention to radon, we want to make sure that there's a quality, competent, certified inspector doing these inspections for schools.
So without a mandate, schools could test and mitigate on their own right now. Do you know how many schools have actually done that voluntarily?
We don't have a count on that. We put out the word, but we didn't get a complete survey on that. But we know that there's a number that are voluntarily putting in place. Des Moines, for example, is putting in place a schedule over a several-year period of rotating inspections and re-inspections on the radon. So, and I know that other districts are looking at doing the same thing now.
And we should explain, too, what mitigating radon means. I mean, when I bought my house here in Iowa, I negotiated so a radon system would be put in, and it's this tube that is in my basement that goes outside. I mean, what is actually happening to mitigate radon?
Well,
Gail.
There's a 4-inch PVC actually, and it goes through the foundation. And what the purpose of it is to pull the radon gas out of the soil under your foundation and vent it out through it, through the attic, through the roof, and then it doesn't pose a problem. It never gets into your house.
Senator McCoy, so you think this is something that could come up again next session then?
Yes, I do. And you know, I would like to respond that the state takes mandates very seriously, and obviously we're very cautious about mandating anything that costs the school districts money. But one of the things that I did check on to make certain that there was adequate funds available is that, first of all, that the PEBL, which is our tax levy for school districts, that those funds would be available for mitigation. In addition, our 1 cent local option sales tax that we provide all the school districts in the state for building construction and renovation and improvements, that both those sources of funding are available. So I think this legislature has been serious about keeping our commitments to infrastructure. So both of those would be available to use for school districts. I believe that we can work through this issue. I think responsible districts in the state will test over the summer. I think that if I was the superintendents throughout the state, and I was affiliated also with the board of school boards throughout the state, I would get an accurate count of how many schools are testing, because I think that's their job. I think they should know that these kids are going into safe school buildings every year.
So how do we know, or how do you know that there is a problem?
Well, I would encourage all parents to call their school board and ask if they're testing in the schools. I think that's the start. That's what I did. I picked up the phone and called Connie Bozen on my school board, and I said, "Connie, is Des Moines testing?" And she said, "I don't know. I'll get back to you on it." And she did, and said, "Yes, they are testing. And I want you to know that we have a comprehensive plan for rotating buildings in and out, and there's a schedule, and we're taking this very seriously." I think that's the kind of information that parents need to know. Dr. Fields, who is a leading advocate and researcher in radon mitigation at the University of Iowa, said that not testing in levels that EPA would consider unsafe in school districts is like sending your child into an environment where they're going to be exposed to 3 or 4 cigarettes per day. So for each day that child spends in a school that with high radon levels, it's the equivalent of 3 or 4 cigarettes a day. Well, I know for all the parents that I know, none of us would support that, and none of us would want our children in an environment that that would expose them to that.
And is that's actual consumption of a cigarette,
yes,
not secondhand?
Not secondhand. It would be actual consumption.
Have we heard that children are getting sick from exposure? I mean, is there a way to track it?
Well, for the most part, you don't realize lung cancer till you're an adult. So the problem is these children will be exposed over the years, but it might not be until they actually have children themselves that they realize lung cancer. And unfortunately, that's the only symptom of radon exposure is you're diagnosed with lung cancer.
Clay, interestingly enough, there are 400 deaths attributed to lung cancer annually in Iowa,
radon,
which are directly tied to radon. Mm-hmm. That's not smoking. That's 400 deaths per year in the state of Iowa, which is about the equivalent of what we lose on our highways each year. So it's a pretty significant number.
Mm-hmm. Galen, what would be acceptable to your members? Is there some way we could get testing done in schools without it being burdensome?
Well, I think one of the things that we, I think our lobbyist has worked with Senator McCoy and shared relative to schedule and pay. And so, I think that I would agree with him. I think that there's a willingness or recognition that we need to facilitate radon testing. As I say, our members get back. I recognize Senator McCoy said that it is possible, and I would agree with him that it is legal for districts to use PEPL funds and sales tax funds. But some of the districts don't have any available funds because they've already committed those funds through various projects. Some districts are what in Iowa we call property poor. And so, if that cost comes back to a district, it's a bigger burden on the taxpayers. The ultimate is if the legislature passes, and even I believe without passing, there's currently a funding mechanism by going to what we call the School Budget Review Committee to do testing. The unfortunate thing is the money, once they get permission to use that mechanism, it does require that they go back to the taxpayers and do a property tax increase. So I think it's a matter of there are these available sources. Again, it becomes difficult for the local school board members that have to answer the question as to having to pay for that out of those local funds for a mandate that came from the state level. We certainly would be willing and agreeable that the state would, one, find the necessary competent certified inspectors, put together a state program whereby they're going to put together the inspectors. I mean, they have a program to inspect vehicles. So it's not that they haven't done a model like this to pay for that. And then there'd be possibly a modest cost to the district, so they so-called would have some skin in the game, but not have to foot the entire bill if they have to do mitigation costs, because those are several thousand dollars.
River to River listeners, do you know whether your child's school tests for radon? Would you like to see the school your child attends or where your loved ones or you work do radon testing? Call us 866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook at Iowa Public Radio, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Gail, I'm curious, have you been surprised by this process, watching this legislation get made?
Not surprised. It's a learning curve. Being a teacher, I've never experienced any of this before, so I guess some of it was surprising, and I'm just learning, and I'm not going away. But I think education is really what's going to make the difference. That school boards learn more about radon, lawmakers learn more about radon, and homeowners' parents learn more about radon.
Danielle from Woodward is calling in. Danielle, what are your thoughts here?
I have no more children left in the school district, yet I understand the gravity of this issue. I think it is a no-brainer. We have something like an $800 million tax surplus. And if as the Republicans claim, they are steeped in family values. What more important issue could you spend the money on than to protect the health of our children? It seems like the Republicans are more concerned about fetuses than they are about the living, breathing, walking children.
Okay, thanks, Danielle. I guess there are, you know, funding really, though, is the issue here that it keeps coming back to. Is there a way to tap into the surplus, as Danielle has talked about, Senator McCoy?
Clay, one of the interesting things that we're working on right now, and as we speak, we're having negotiations with the American Cancer Society to understand, you know, project what some of these costs are. We have what's called the Infrastructure Fund, and I'm transportation chair of that fund, the Transportation Infrastructure Fund. That is funding that comes from gaming revenue. And so it's off budget, and what we've proposed is that a fund be established within that fund to, first of all, establish a mandate for testing statewide. So we'd actually put that into legislation this session yet, and we would pay for that. There is a comprehensive network of testers in the state that is more than adequate to test every school building in the state or every attendance center in the state. And we have absolute we've confirmed with public safety there's no doubt that that could all be done within a calendar year. Then we would have accurate numbers when we come back and come into the next session. What I've proposed is that we establish this fund and we establish the funding for testing. And then as we get the results back from testing, if they're as bad as what we fear they are, being zone one and radon gas, and really ground zero for radon gas, we could then appropriate the necessary funds to help with the situations where we could go into property poor districts. And I will say that we're not insensitive to the fact that some districts are better equipped to deal with this problem than other districts.
Galen, what would your reaction be to that?
Well, I think that sounds like the underlying approach that would be, you know, favorable and in the step in the right direction from what we would recommend.
We're going to go now to Rick in Iowa City. Rick, you're on River to River.
Yes. My name is Rick Chambers. I'm an electrical contractor in Iowa City. And while I'm not a radon expert, I just wanted to comment that while in situations where money is an issue, that because radon is in the soil, that buildings that have classrooms and other rooms where staff and students spend a lot of time that are at or below grade, either completely or partially below grade, are the ones that are the priority ones to test first.
Okay, Rick, and that's something that you've seen on a regular basis when you're out doing your job, it sounds like?
Well, we do the testing. I've tested my own house, and we do the testing in the basement at the lowest level, and that is where it's always the worst just because it comes in through the walls, through the soil, through the walls and the floor.
Rick, you're absolutely right, and I also learned throughout this process that in addition to the lower levels being an issue, one of the things that is a misnomer is a lot of people think that if they have a new building, that would be less susceptible to radon gas than an old building. And there's no correlation at all between old buildings and new buildings. So this isn't a standpoint from, you know, we've got an old building, it must have radon, or we have a new building, it must not have radon. It impacts all buildings, regardless of the age of the building.
And in Iowa, where does it rank as far? It's high up there, if not number one.
Iowa has the highest incidence of radon in the country. 7 out of 10 homes in Iowa have a level that's dangerous, and people don't know.
So are there plans for, or what would be a plan for prioritizing schools that need it most? I mean, is that a way to further the ball if it goes nowhere in this session and you bring it up next time?
Well, I think it's interesting. One of the things that Galen mentioned was perhaps some districts are better equipped than others to pay. Maybe this fund should be established to help with property poor districts first, and then work their way through the process so that those districts that don't have the means have the resources they need to do the job.
These property poor districts, what are you hearing from them about how they are they concerned and how would they fund something like that, Galen?
Well, for instance, we had a district the other day, a very small district that got hit. There's other inspections besides radon that occur in districts. There's boiler inspections, there's asbestos inspections, there's fire marshal inspections every year. And so one district got hit with a quarter of $1 million, which is a district that's under 600 in size. And they, you know, their PEPL was expended. And so they're trying to find how they would fund that. And so, it's not just the property poor. I mean, there are some districts that have their funds committed, but it would be easier for a district on the testing side to go to the school budget review committee and do it through the general fund.
And that's where we'll have to end the conversation. We'll keep watching it. Thanks to my guests, Senator Matt McCoy, a Democrat from Des Moines, and to Gail Orcutt, a radon-induced lung cancer survivor from Pleasant Hill, and Galen Hauser, the Deputy Executive Director of the Iowa Association of School Boards. Thanks for being on the show today, guys.
Thank you.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News, produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins, production assistance today from John Pimble. I'm Clay Masters. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.